So now let's hear from Srimad Bhagavatam. And we can, every day we should think about verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, meditate on them, and think each one is a jewel. We're wealthy. We're rich now. We have them. So we should take them out and count them and look at them over and over again. So let's find where we are in the Bhagavatam. Which is it? 1 9 what?
Yeah, 1 9 17.
1 9 17. Okay. So yeah. Do the verse.
Page 26.
Just sit up here.
No.
If you like. Okay, it's, text 17. Is that what it is? Tasmaridam daivatantram.
Tasmaridam daivatantram.
Vyavasya bharatarshabha.
Vyavasya bharatarshabha.
Tasyanu vihito
nata. Tasyanu vihito
nata. Nata pahi praja prabho.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Tasmad idam daiva tantram.
Tasmad idam daiva tantram.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Tasyadidam daiva tantram.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Yavasya Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Ladies.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Yavasya bharatarshabha.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Yavasya
bharatarshabha.
Tasyanu
vihito nata. Nata pahi praja prabho.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Tasmadidam daiva tantram.
Vyavasya bharatarshabha.
Vyavasya bharatarshabha.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Tasyanu vihito nata.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Nata pahi praja prabho.
Tasmad.
Therefore,
idam,
this,
daiva tantram,
enchantment of providence only,
vyavasya,
ascertaining,
Bharata Rishabha, O best among the descendants of Bharata,
tasya,
by him,
anuvihita,
as desired. Anataha.
Anataha.
Helpless.
Helpless.
Nata.
Nata.
O Master.
O Master.
Pahi.
Pahi.
Just take care of.
Praja.
Of the subjects.
Of the subjects.
Prabho.
Prabho.
O Lord.
O Lord.
Akurnath Prabhu.
O best among the descendants of Bharata, Yudhishthira, I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now the appointed administrative head, and, my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. Purport. The popular saying is that a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Similarly, the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotee. The devotee does not have to learn anything new from the Lord because the Lord teaches the sincere devotee always from within. Whenever, therefore, a show is made to teach the devotee, as in the case of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, it is for teaching the less intelligent men. A devotee's duty, therefore, is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. The Pandavas were advised by Bhishma Dev to accept the responsibility of administration without hesitation. The poor subjects were without protection due to the battle of Kurukshetra, and they were awaiting the assumption of power by Maharaj Yudhishthira. A pure devotee of the Lord accepts tribulations as favors from the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two.
The microphone over here.
So, who's speaking?
Bhishma.
Who's he speaking to? Well, very instructive. Yudhishthira, he was lamenting, right, that so many people had died at the battle of Kurukshetra for his sake, and he's wanting to just give up and go away. And Bhishma is saying, no, you can't do that. We have service to do. And that you should accept everything that's happened as the arrangement of the Lord. And whatever arrangement is there that the Lord has made, whatever tribulations that the devotees are going through, it's not. In other words, he's saying that this isn't duty or karma. You shouldn't think that this whole thing has happened because of you. Sometimes we're so self-centered. We're thinking everything's just revolving around us. Bhishma Devi, he's saying it's nothing you've done. This is just simply the arrangement of the Lord for teaching others that you have to go on with your service like that. And even with ourselves, you know, sometimes we're wanting to understand maybe too much the trials and tribulations of our own life, and we become focused upon those problems. Rather than just simply depending upon the mercy of the Lord and accepting, you know, things as they are, we tend to resist them. We tend to resist what is. And, you know, the common saying is resist, persist. And whatever you resist, you're putting your attention and your energy into it, and therefore it will persist. But the beauty of Krishna consciousness is one of the beauties is that ultimately everything is arranged by Krishna, and we may not understand it sometimes. And especially in the life of a devotee, it's said that even from the very beginning, we were just talking about this the other day, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Apichet Sura Churo Vajitimon Ananibak Sadhareva Samantaryas Samyas Dharas Ditohisa. Krishna's talking about the glories of devotional service in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And he's saying even for one who is not a perfect devotee, one maybe a fallen devotee, but because he's taken up Krishna consciousness, because he knows the goal, even though he's not doing so well, perfecting that goal, because he knows it and he's doing the best he can, he's not a normal person, Arjuna. He's a sadhu, and we must think of him as a sadhu. We must recognize that. It's not so much that we're recognizing this person, but we're recognizing Krishna and how wonderful devotional service is. So you cannot really separate the two. Because devotional service is wonderful, then anyone who takes up devotional service, even from the beginning, they're also wonderful. And by not recognizing that, then we're also basically minimizing the joys of devotional service. So back to the point is that because we're taking the Krishna consciousness, we're not so much really under the realm of karma anymore. Whatever is happening in our life, we should accept it as the arrangement of the Lord for our purification and not get into a whole debate within our mind of why this is happening to me. Of course, we also need to take responsibility for our mind and for our activities and understand that whatever suffering is coming to me is due to my own sinful activities and my attachments, my ignorance, and that we continue on with our devotional service. There's the verse in the 11th canto, the famous verse. Is it 11th canto? Tate.
10.
Tate anakampam shanichamano bunjane evatma kritam vipakam.
Hridvagvapurvirvidanam namaste jivete.
You know the verse? Can you tell in the English?
Tateinu kampanam jisunishyamatma. So, really the verse says is like, the difficulties keep coming, but the difficult, even in those difficulties, if you think that they are arrangement of Krishna, the difficulties in this life keep coming, but they are all planned for Krishna. We don't at this moment when we face something, why Krishna has given us, we might think that thing. But later we'll come to know what was Krishna's arrangement. It's always for the good, because he always thinks of the good, he thinks of the good. So the work says that, like the work. Tateinu kampanam susunikshamadam punjana evatma tatam vipakam frudvak vapurbe vidaran namaste jive tayo mukti kavesa rayava. So, thinking that waiting for Krishna, that Krishna one day will surely plant your mercy. So, whoever the devotee, we have to just wait, because Krishna will surely bestow his mercy. So, waiting for him, and then who is like with frudvak vapurbe, like with heart, mind, and like chanting or whatever. So whoever can sing the glories and keep waiting for Krishna, so Krishna will surely bestow his mercy upon the devotee, whoever it is. I'm not sure.
No, that's true.
Hari
Bhav. Was that verse by Lord Brahma?
Yeah.
So we should... what's going on in our life, it's very complicated, karma is very complicated, but we should trust that actually Krishna, he's the only one who can cancel the karma. And so what's going on in our life, there may be some results of our karma that are going on, but there also may be some lesson that Krishna is trying to teach us or trying to teach others. But we should accept that everything is going on by Krishna's arrangement. And it's not just going on according to the impersonal law of karma, but because we're surrendering to him, he's taking personal interest in our life. And whatever arrangement he's making for us is for our own good. That's one. That's transcendental toleration and transcendental faith. There's different types of toleration. When Krishna's talking about Matra Sparsha's Kakunteya, Skitoshna Supadupada, where he's saying that one should tolerate happiness and distress, or one should, just like one tolerates the winter and summer seasons, that's also a kind of toleration. But there's not too much mention of bhakti in that. That's more like mental toleration of understanding I'm not the body, I'm not the mind. But when we're tolerating things in relationship to Krishna, then it takes on a transcendental aspect where we're going to continue our service in spite of, you know, the problems we're having with our body, problems we're having with our mind, out of devotion to Krishna, out of trust in Krishna. We're going to tolerate that. So that verse that you were mentioning is tolerance in bhakti, you know, while performing bhakti. It's different. So whatever is going on in our life, if we meditate upon that problem and we're trying to understand it and we're trying to resist it, rather than just surrendering to Krishna, then the problem persists, and then we're entering the realm, the world of the mind, the world of the body, and we tend to, in a karmic way, keep that problem going on. But when we surrender to Krishna, then we're entering the realm of the soul, the spiritual realm, and things can be a transcendental result can develop from that, rather than persisting the material result, but a transcendental result can come. So lots of times where we face situations, you know, in our life where we don't have the answer right away, we don't know what to do. So then the tendency is to enter the realm of the mind and think about it, and no conclusion comes. But at those times, you know, we should chant the Hare Krishna mantra and depend upon the Lord, and depend on the Lord for, if we're supposed to know, what to do, then he'll show us the way. And if not, it'll resolve on its own, but we should trust the Lord. You know, there's that famous serenity prayer. I think I talked about it a couple of classes ago. It's famous in the AA, the Alcohol Anonymous. When they deal with problems, there's a prayer they say. It's particularly, they say it in relationship to addiction, but really it can be applied to any situation we face. That we don't like the result, and we don't know if we should do something about it or if we should just accept it the way it is. Just like Yudhisthira Maharaj, he's this battle of Kurukshetra's occurred, all the men have been killed, there's all these subjects he needs to protect, but he wants to leave the situation and not deal with it anymore, and he just wants to go away. So he has a situation, and there's a problem there. How should I deal with it? So we face situations like that in our life. And so the serenity prayer says, God give me the
serenity to accept
the things I cannot change, right?
And the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah. And the wisdom to know the difference, right? So give me the courage to accept the things I cannot change. Give me the courage to try and change the things I can, and the wisdom to know. Where does the wisdom come from to know the difference? Sometimes we don't know the difference. Can I do something about the situation? Or is it beyond my control? Should I just accept it? If you accept it, then you're not resisting anymore. And if you can change it, then you can do something about it. But you can only do something about it in the moment. We can't do something about it in the future, and we can't do anything about the past. So if it's something about the future, if it's something about the past, you can't do anything about it. But if you dwell on it, then it persists in your mind. So where does the wisdom come from to know the difference? And the wisdom comes when we surrender to Krishna, and we depend on him, in all situations. Then it becomes revealed to us if we can do something about it or if we can't. And that's where the wisdom comes from the super soul within our heart. So, as devotees, we should just be like Yudhisthira Maharaj in this situation when we face the problems in our life and situations that we don't like. We should come to this point of first understanding that it's not something that Krishna's just doing to us and it's beyond our control. Sometimes the way we say this, right, that why is Krishna doing this to me? When it's something we don't like, right, well, you know, now Krishna's doing it to me. Or if it's a situation, you know, if everything's fine, then we tend to forget Krishna and think, maybe I deserve this from my good karma or something. But we shouldn't think like this. So we should take responsibility for whatever thoughts, whatever words, whatever actions we're doing, and then we should just depend on Krishna for all results. And then we can stay peaceful, and we can make the best choices, and we can always stay connected. You know, we always are connected to Krishna, but we can I remember to stay connected. So, any other comments or questions?
So, if a reverse happens or some suffering happens for a devotee who is not completely surrendered, so should he think that it has happened because Krishna wants me to improve more in my devotional service, or is it because I have done something wrong which should not be done and Krishna is chastising me for that? Or I mean, what should be the approach? Should we try to cut ourselves more and try to follow the instructions more carefully, or should we just think that okay, it's all because of Krishna's mercy and we just continue doing the same way as we are doing?
Well, that's a really good question. The first, to begin with, whatever is happening, whatever we're experiencing, is due to the way we're using our mind, the way we're using our body, and we should accept responsibility for that. You know, whatever our experience is. You know, basically, it's going on in our own mind. And we have to accept that. And once we accept that, then we can change it. You know? If we blame it on Krishna, or if we blame it on others, then the problem will persist. You know, until we understand that it's our ignorance. You know, that I've chosen to forget Krishna. I'm using my mind in this particular way. Until we accept responsibility, then we can't change. But once we accept responsibility, then we have the power to change. So, and just like the verse Tateno Kampam, the mood of the devotee is that whatever's happening to me is, you know, that I'm responsible for it. You know. But at the same time, one trusts in Krishna that I'm trying to surrender to Krishna, and he's there personally helping me. You know, that actually I deserve much more. So even though I'm responsible for all this, Krishna, he's minimizing the result, and he's also arranging things in a way that will help me from making this mistake again, and will cause me to surrender to him more and more. So in both ways, we have to accept responsibility, but at the same time, we have to trust in Krishna.
What he said, things that happen to people that's not surrendered, if you really pay attention, problem happens even to surrendered people. Like, for example, Hanuman Prashadam's Chitta class here, and he talk about the life of Sita. She has so many problems. Yudhishthira has so many problems. Arjuna has a lot of problems. It's not that the problem is just for this nature material world, And one thing that Hridayananda was saying in the class, The problem is just like when you drive the freeway, you go the bump, that means you're out of track. So that problem will make you go back though. Like for driving, they start sleep and it, you know, and then that will make you bring. So what Krishna does is, you know, bring this problem to bring us back, you know, to our direction, you know. So I really like when I heard that, you know, like, you know, these things that really bring. But problem is nature, material world. But one thing that I know, it's very important also to give a practical way, and people say, like, surrender to Krishna, you know. Surrender to Krishna, what does it mean to surrender to Krishna? And in my last month, first of all, I want to say thank you very much to the Association of Devotees. That's really helpful. Now, it's changed my whole life just to see you guys inspired book distribution. And what I'm doing nowadays when I have a problem, try to bring something practical, sometimes I think, I don't know what my mind is, but I know I need to go to the temple. I come to the temple, you know? Sometimes I get confused. She do this, that. It's a lot of instruction. I go to the temple to do distribution. I don't care if I qualify, I purify, you know, say, Krishna, Prabhupada said, sell books. I just go sell books, you know? Because that is a lot of instruction, you know? And like he said, if you try to understand it, we don't have intelligence. But if they say, go to the temple, you know, associate with the devotee, that you can do, you know? I said, like, a person, when you're sick, you know, you might not be able to help yourself, but you can bring yourself to the doctor. So by association, by coming to the temple, and it makes a big difference, you know? And I personally want to say really thank you, because for many years, I want to come back to Sankirtana. And also my mind, oh, I'm not purified, I'm not this and that. You come back here, even kids go to Sankirtana. I want to baby, even dogs go to Sankirtana, you know? I said, look, I don't care what the mind is saying. I just come here, you know? And when I really feel lost, I come to the Mongol Lodge. You know, when I come to Mongol Lodge, not because I'm a good devotee, I say, man, I don't know what to do, but I know Krishna is here, I just come here, you know? And so, like practical things, like really, has a lot of simple things. So, surrender to Krishna means, you know, they say, come to the temple, go, and just put yourself on that, you know? And it's a miracle, like I said, like he said today, like, we don't have qualification, but Krishna can do it. I was scared of Sankirtan for more than 20 years. I'm not going to fight. Talk about Sankirtan whole life. I come here, everybody going, so, you know, I don't care. I'm just going to go there, good or bad. I don't have any results. You know, if you go Lakshmi, I don't have any Lakshmi, but I'm there, you know. And one day I was home, and then I feel bad. I have all the books at home. And I just want to book. I just want to show people book. I didn't sell one book. But I was glad to be there at showing, you know. And then people look, they don't look at the book, and like, nowadays it's loaded. So this is really important, practical, simple things, you know. They can really, you know, because of that surrender, like, no, the spirit soul, no. No, it's like, you know, he called me, you want to go to Sankirtan? Yeah, I go, you know. I don't know what my mind is, you know, I just go, you know. And when I see you guys doing, you know, and that's, you know, association, just, you know, practical thing, just put yourself there, you know. And then whatever happens, it's Krishna, you know. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Pass it on. Okay.
I don't know if this anyone else had this experience, but sometimes devotees talk to me, devotees who are going through a lot of real tribulation, they're suffering from, you know, loss of wealth, physical problems, you know, really bad health problems and things. And when I try to, you know, talk to them about, you know, tathain kampam and just try to see this Krishna's mercy, sometimes they don't receive it very well, as if maybe it's just me. They feel I'm just repeating some formula rather than really, you know, identifying with them and how bad they really are suffering, or something. And you know, that I say, well, Krishna's just testing you. I don't want to be tested. I've been tested enough, you know. But, and how I want to ask you, you know, how how do you counsel such people when they're really suffering so hard? How to counsel them when they come for sympathy to the devotee?
Well, I think first thing we can do is to have compassion for their suffering, acknowledge their suffering, and help them to acknowledge their own suffering. Because we can't, if we ignore the suffering, it's a kind of, it will tend to persist. That's more of like, what in psychology it would be suppression. It's not like we should pretend that it's not there for ourselves or for somebody else. So the first step for them is to accept their suffering and not deny it and say, oh, I'm not suffering, oh, I'm not my body, I'm not my mind. It's true, actually, that we're not our body, we're not our mind. But to come to that state, first we have to accept, you know, that the body is suffering, the mind is suffering. But then we can go to the stage of being atmavan, or situated within the self. And the self is not suffering. But the mind is suffering, the body is suffering. And when we accept that, and then we, because everyone in the material world has to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease. There's no exceptions, you know. And when we're thinking, when we're suffering, when our body's suffering, it's like my back's suffering a lot right now. And I can sit there and try and analyze, why am I suffering? What did I do? What did, you know, or how do I overcome it? Or is it going to get better? Is it going to go away? And all of this, but all of this just causes it, the condition to persist, because I'm meditating upon it, you know. But if I accept it the way it is, you know, that I'm doing the best I can to deal with it. And it may get better, it may not, but that's my, you know, that's the situation as it is. If I accept that, then I tend to forget about it, right? And then I can think about Krishna. And if I go up to somebody and I start telling them about my back pain, and they say, probably, you know, your back's not really hurting. Maybe your back's hurting, but you're not hurting, you're not your body. They're not accepting my pain, and then I'll want to tell them more about it, right? And so we do the same thing with ourselves. If we accept our suffering, but then we don't resist it. A lot of our suffering, a lot of our pain, and a lot of what persists the suffering is when we resist it and don't accept it, and then want it to be different. Then that's where the suffering comes in. And then we're not thinking about Krishna, we're not thinking about our spiritual nature. We become absorbed in our mind and our body, and we suffer. So I think that the first thing is to say, yes, this world is a place of suffering, yes, this body is suffering, the mind is suffering, and accept it. But then, hear the transcendental vibration and become absorbed in the self, become absorbed in service to Krishna. And then sometimes they say the best way to overcome your personal suffering is to start worrying about the suffering of others, because then you forget about your own suffering. So whatever our mind is dwelling on, that's what we'll be experiencing. So I don't know if that helps. Oh, you have here.
Thank you. I had a couple thoughts about this. One was one time in St. Louis, Ma Mooney was there, and he became very sick. He had a fever. It must have been a high fever, because he was really in pain. And he was in the Brahmacharya ashram, lying on the floor. Ma Mooney's a very robust, strong, he's been around for a long time, serving Prabhupada. And anyway, he was on the floor in the Brahmacharya ashram, and he was so overcome with fever that at one point he kind of moaned. And there was a newer brahmachari, a newer devotee in the ashram, and he heard him moan. And he said, Prabhu, you're not your body. And Ma Mooney rolled over, kind of looked at him, you know, and he said, Prabhu, you're not my body. And I was
thinking of the verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna talks about a yogi who's actually advanced, and he says sarvatra, that he uses this word that he has empathy. And I think of how Prabhupada didn't have this, you know, kind of cut and dry, like, you're not your body feeling, but when devotees would come from a long distance, he would find out from them, you know, how are you feeling? Did you get prasadam? You know, and even devotees sometimes, I've seen when they're recalling memories of Prabhupada, they cry when they remember that when Prabhupada was leaving his body, he was not taking food, water, anything, and his body had become completely emaciated. It's obviously, you know, for an ordinary person would be, as the doctor said, would be, you know, writhing in pain. And some devotees came to visit Prabhupada, and the first thing Prabhupada asked them was, did you get prasadam? How are you feeling? And then he wanted to know if all the devotees were being taken care of, if they were getting the prasadam. And this was, you know, his common attitude towards devotees is, are they being taken care of? And when they got sick, he didn't just say, well, that's just your body. He would give them remedies, even. He would, because Prabhupada used to know how to mix different herbs and things like that. He would tell devotees how to get rid of a headache and feel bad for them, you know, that they were in that situation. And so Vaishnavas are not, you know, just sort of mechanical. They're not mechanical. They actually feel for other people, paratukaduki. And when Maitreya is speaking to Vidura, he tells him that actually, although the soul's an illusion, he's still suffering because he identifies with the dream of the material life. And it's not that he's not suffering. The suffering is temporary and it's illusory, but he's suffering nonetheless. Just like when you're in a dream, you actually suffer when you have a nightmare. You can't say you're not suffering. In one way, it's illusory because you're not actually experiencing it, but at the same time, you are because of your misidentification with it. So there's a real nexus between this idea we're not our body and we should just tolerate it and everything, and also having compassion that we are suffering because we're in this situation. I wanted to say one other thing, if I might, about this, what I was thinking in this verse. What came out for me was the idea of spiritual stress. And this is a bona fide, actually, a bona fide spiritual anxiety, spiritual stress that Prabhupada talked about. And
you talked about book distribution, how for 20 years you were afraid, you know, you feel an anxiety when you're thinking about it. So one devotee, this is in the Veda base, it's on the record of conversation with Prabhupada. One devotee named Guru Kripa had asked Prabhupada on behalf of some devotees. He said, you know, Prabhupada, sometimes devotees get anxiety about book distribution because, you know, they're either afraid to go out or what's going to happen when I get there or it's difficult or something like that. And Prabhupada immediately jumped in and said, no, tell them this is spiritual anxiety. This is not normal anxiety. And he recounted how Mother Yashoda was in so much anxiety about Krishna eating properly. Of course, there's a whole story about how Nanda Maharaj had taken, out of all the millions of cows he had, they picked out the best of all the best cows, and they put them in a place where the best of all the grasses, they brought them in. And then, you know, that milk they got from those few cows they'd give to Krishna. And that was the milk she was cooking on the stove, actually, during the Damodar Leela, is this rarefied substance, you know, from the best of the best cows, filled with the best grass and everything. And then, when she was holding Krishna, and then the milk started boiling over, so she put him down, she went to go get the milk, and then of course Krishna became angry and he broke the pot and he ran off, and, you know, Mother Yashoda was like, this is service to Krishna. She was doing service to Krishna. It's not like she was ignoring him, but, you know, there's an anxiety in devotional service because a lot of times, you know, we have some service here and then, you know, the milk's boiling over, you know, or there's so many anxieties. I can say, being a leader of a small but soon to be gigantic organization here, there's lots of anxieties all the time. I get calls, you know, 5, 10, 50 times a day
that cause me like, oh no, what am I going to do about this? Mostly it's interpersonal relationship kind of things, like, you know, how are we going to work this one out? You know, anxiety. So I was reading this little thing about stress and how diamonds are made, and it really helped me. Actually, I heard this example when we were in Japan, and that diamonds come from coal, from carbon, actually. It's black substance, and I read up on it on the internet, and somehow when there's volcanic action, this, well, maybe you can correct me, I don't know if you know geology also, but this carbon gets pushed about 100 miles down. That's way deep into the earth. And there's millions of tons of pressure. That it's a black substance, you know, if you wash it, it'll just stay black, 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 black. But under this intense pressure, it gets pushed over eons and millions of tons of pressure. And then somehow or other it gets pushed up to the top after it's been compressed, and it turns into these diamonds, the carbon does. And so then, of course, a qualified geologist can walk by. To normal people, they don't see that it's a diamond, actually. It just looks like a rock until you take it and polish it. You know where it's supposed to be, and you can look at it and find it's a diamond. And then when you cut it, polish it and everything, then it becomes, you know, the most valuable stone. So anyway, a lot of times when I'm in all this stress and there's things coming from every direction, then I think of this. And it actually, I feel it as well, that spiritual anxiety when we're doing our service, if you take a risk for Krishna, you take some responsibility for Krishna, it may be anxiety, and you may be giving up the comfort zone or something like that. Everyone here has this experience, I'm sure, that although it's difficult at first, because you're doing it for Krishna, he'll help us, but also he gives some special compensation also, and he helps to form you. You know, it makes you stronger to be able to handle that. And gradually, of course, in my case, this hasn't happened, but gradually somebody becomes, you know, fortified and like a jewel, you know, under all this pressure. And I've seen it throughout the years that devotees have taken responsibility and they're subjected to so many different kinds of pressures and so on and so forth. Even if sometimes they fail, but they keep going, then they become jewel-like, you know, and it develops that strong character. So there were two unrelated things, but that was just two comments.
Well, I have a question.
Microphone.
When the purport, the last line, I can understand. Since the law is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two. So, last line in the
book. Last line. A pure devotee of the Lord accepts tribulations as favors from the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two. That's he's saying there's no difference between tribulations and favors. No difference between the two. And it's sort of the subject that we're talking about. That for a devotee, actually, it's pleasure. Even when there's tribulations given by the Lord. In fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this is one of the relationships the Lord has with his devotee. You know, on a basic level, that's a good one. Ashli Shiva Paravatam Binashtamam Adarshanam Marma Hatam Kodotuva Yata Tata Vavi Tata Tulampato. This verse, you know, where the Lord may neglect one, but then for a pure devotee, this is bringing out more feeling of separation and you know, remembrance of the Lord. And also, Harishe Taddanam Shanai. The Shastra says, or Krishna says to Yudhisthira in the Mahabharata, that when I show special favor to the Lord, to the devotee, I take away his possessions and make him more dependent. You know, and Prabhupada, of course, we've recited this many times, but he says in his own life, he recounts his own life and how Krishna took away everything gradually, his business, his family life, everything was gradually, as he said, dismantled by Krishna. And at the time when it's happening, it may be very difficult to handle even. That stress is there, right? But then gradually, because the Lord is within the heart, guiding, then everything comes by the mercy of the Lord, gradually, and He gives us everything. Especially when we realize our dependent position, that normally in life we're thinking, this can protect me, my money can protect me. Well, at least I got that money in the bank. And then it's like, oh, I lost my money too? You know? Then, well, I got my friends, you know, it's like, and then they reject you. And so, and then when you have nothing left but the Lord, it's actually a favorable condition. And I was going to say, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that for the devotees of the Lord, there are three reasons the Lord gives these kinds of tribulations, or three instances that he mentions. How if you are in the desert and you don't have water, and then someone gives you water, that becomes all the more valuable. When you have water everywhere and you get water, it's not such a big thing. But if you're deprived of water and you're about to drop dead and someone shows you a glass of water, you'll pay $1 million for that glass of water. So when the Lord puts us in a situation where we're struggling sometimes, then it becomes all the sweeter when we're able to take shelter of Him. And then He gives an esoteric thing. He says in conjugal relations, sometimes there's biting between lovers. This is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And someone might say, oh, there's a wound there, you know. But for the lovers, it's actually pleasurable. So sometimes Krishna might inflict something on the devotee. Like even devotees, they might get some disease like cancer or something like that. But to someone who is very advanced, they'll be feeling that actually this is Krishna's loving embrace, that He's given me this just to wake me up. And we see with devotees who have taken shelter, even in our ISKCON movement, one devotee just passed away a couple days ago, who's very dear god sister, Komadaki Dasi. She left on Saturday at 4:55 in the afternoon. Nirkula had been up there to see her last weekend because she was an old friend. Do you remember Komadaki? She worked for the BBT for many years in Los Angeles. And she had been diagnosed about 4 or 5 years ago with some kind of cancer, and they said, you're going to die, you know, within 6 months. So she went to the Dom. I remember I saw her there, and I said, hi, what are you doing here? She goes, oh, I'm going to leave my body, you know. Oh, okay, well, that's nice, you know. But then they were wrong. The diagnosis was, Krishna gave her like 3 more years. Anyway, she ended up back in Canada, and she was in Vancouver, and then she really started going downhill health-wise, but there's descriptions. Nirkula was talking about how she was in the hospice there, and she never complained about anything. The nurses were just amazed at her composure, and she was chanting every day and taking shelter of Krishna. And there were some wonderful accounts of how she was near, about 3 days before she left her body, that she was saying to Kriya Shakti. Everyone knows Kriya Shakti. She comes here and does the flowers sometimes. She went up there to take care of her. Anyway, she told Kriya Shakti one day when she was kind of... she looked up and she said, what are all these devotees doing here? There was only Kriya Shakti in the room. She said, what are all these devotees doing here? Are we having a picnic? Are they all going to stay? Just some amazing things. This is sort of a digression, but my point is that devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord, we see even in our ISKCON movement, Nirguna, he left his body last year, I think, in Mayapur. And some miraculous things, as he was leaving his body, he was obviously taking deep shelter of Krishna and saying some profound things. He was holding a Govardhan Shila that Madhava Maharaj had put in his hand. And then he said something like, yeah, just take this Shila and get out of here. Like, you know, take the stone and leave your body, kind of thing, he was saying. Profound things happen. So
the other person was, you may know, Swami Krishnapad. Was it Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj?
Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, yes.
Who had developed cancer suddenly. And there's a video, actually, of him, which I saw, where he had his last meeting with devotees. His last meeting with devotees. when he was describing this cancer that had taken over his body. And in that meeting with devotees, he was saying, he was taking it very positively how the Lord had blessed him, that now he's calling me to him and made his departure very early, so he's preparing to leave. And he was there with all his devotees. I think Radhanath Swami was also there in that assembly. It was held Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He was asking all the members who had gathered to give him the release. And he said that this cancer that had occurred to him may be God's way that he's also taken on the suffering of many other devotees whom he had guided. And he talked about Christ also at that time, the suffering that Christ had before he left. And he had said that there is no such thing as leaving this body and going to the spiritual world where you are free of suffering. And so he gave many examples of those who had left at that time, that they were in deep suffering. Either they had a terminal disease, a cancer or suffering. But he took upon it very positively that the Lord was actually inviting him to join him. And some of this suffering was really the suffering of some of his devotees, his disciples, that he had taken on upon himself. That's the way he had looked at it. So it was really a very emotional video and a great call. But he was looking upon his death in a very positive manner rather than questioning why did he get cancer when he was so Krishna conscious.
Right. Thank you.
Yes. I'd just like to tie this into Prabhupada's question. Mm. And that is, you can see from that our experience of the suffering is very much dependent upon how we're viewing it. So in the case of we're doing service for Krishna and we're in anxiety, if we're remembering that, you know, I'm in anxiety because I'm doing this service for Krishna, it's different. It takes on a different, it's a different kind of suffering than I'm just suffering due to my karma or, you know. If we see, just like Prabhupada, he underwent so much suffering and so much anxiety coming to America to preach, but he was always aware that he was doing it because of the spiritual master's order. So that remembrance at the same time was simultaneously ecstasy, suffering but ecstasy. So even if suffering can be ecstasy for us when it's connected to Krishna, but if we forget that, then it becomes regular mundane suffering with no higher, you know, apparently no higher purpose. So as long as we stay connected to Krishna in service, then even though there's suffering, we'll have a different attitude. And it's our attitude, the way we view something, that causes our experience. That's what I mean when I say we have to take responsibility for our suffering. That, you know, where is the suffering coming from in the mind? It's all due to the way we're viewing a particular event, really, that's causing the suffering. It's our expectations not being met. And, you know, where, you know, it's not coming from outside of us. It's coming, it's in our own consciousness. It's generated within our own mind due to how we're viewing a particular situation. That's what determines the actual experience that we have, and which we're 100% responsible for, nobody else.
Keshav Bharti Maharaj recently has been, when we talk, he has a sort of a mantra he's been saying over and over again, and that is, everybody gets exactly what they deserve. Not more, not less. Ultimately, you know, this is part and parcel with this idea, you know, that I should be thinking that I'm getting, this is tatenu kampam susamikshamanu, bunjana evatma kritam vipaka, means thinking, whatever I'm getting, I deserve. Of course, actually that's not entirely true, because the devotee feels like when some good comes, that's Krishna's special mercy, and when some bad comes, it wasn't enough. But still, it sort of puts us in this mood of not being the victim, Like whatever I am, whatever situation I am in now, somehow or other, I've caused it. I've brought it upon myself. This is the idea. And it's helpful for spiritual life to understand that and to remember that I'm responsible for getting out of it also by taking shelter of Krishna. Gop Priyamanande Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Satyadeva Prabhu ki jai, Gop Priyamanande.